Okay, joining me in the studio now, we have Audrey McCready. Audrey, former employee of the EU Commission, no longer, but still kind of keep an eye on European activities and everything else. Just to, as I said at the start, we've done a lot of coverage of TTIP, lots of people coming on and complaining about it and everything else. And fair play to Audrey, she got in touch with us. And we kind of love that because we're all about balance here. You know, we really want to give a balanced view on all kinds of arguments and everything else. Sometimes, as we found, especially around the water charges issue, it's sometimes hard to get people to talk on the pro side of things. And I'm not putting you on the pro camp of TTIP, by the way. But when you did contact us, you kind of said, you know, there was some things that were people were talking about that maybe necessarily went through. So we're going to go through them and maybe unravel some of those mysteries. Sure. So first and foremost, thanks very much for getting in touch with us and thanks very much for coming in, because it's brilliant to get an opportunity to do something like
well,
this.
Well, I'm delighted to be here on this lovely autumn morning, Mark.
It is absolutely beautiful morning. Nice, yeah. All that fog and all of the weekend is gone, thank God. But yeah, on the TTIP thing, as I said, it was through the anti-water campaign that I first became aware mm-hmm. of TTIP and start reading into it. And lots of stuff out there, people, you know, about how it's all shrouded in mystery and yes. people are, I suppose, that leads people to be suspicious of why is it all secret, why is nobody telling us, and then it can snowball into a conspiracy theories and things like that, and social media plays a huge part in that, because yes. lots of people put stuff on social media and people read it as truth.
Yes, absolutely.
And they don't necessarily at times dig into yeah. what may be the happen. So what we've done here is there's a great document. It's on the European Commission website.
That's right.
And if anybody wants to get a hold of it and they're concerned about it, and we'll give the email address at the end, it's called The Top 10 Myths About TTIP, Separating Fact from Fiction. And that's what we're going to kind of go through this morning.
Well, I must say, having worked for the Commission for 13 years, we got very used to being slagged off as faceless Eurocrats who were secretly trying to take over the planet. So it kind of goes the territory when you're in yeah. the job. So yes, it has left me a bit sensitive to yeah. people sort of accusing the Commission of terrible yeah. things. And so, yeah, when I saw the, I've just stumbled across the interviews, yeah. I was looking for something else in the usual way. And I was sort of saying, hold on a second, that doesn't sound right. I mean, people accusing the European Commission of doing terrible things, undermining democracy. And I just thought, I don't think so. So
I suppose that's a view some people will take sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You know, undermining democracy, I suppose, is a bit difficult. But we'll kind of drill sure. onto some of these, right? We've got about five topics here. First up, TTIP will force governments to privatise public services. Now, again, this kind of rolls on from where a lot of the anti-water campaign came from.
Yeah.
A lot of people saw Irish water privatisation yeah. going to cost you thousands of dollars in 5 years' time for your water and everything else. So this idea of TTIP will force governments to privatise public services, what's the truth, or what is the facts, so to speak, behind that idea?
Well, again, I have no idea where people are getting that interpretation from, because the European Commission has a policy, a very awkward title called subsidiarity, which means that member states, that's all the 28 member states, mm-hmm. are allowed to decide as much as possible at local level. And the Commission only intervenes, or Europe only comes in on issues that cover all of the member states.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question of governments being dictated to that they have to privatise their public services. Mm-hmm. And I think this document, Top 10 Myths, makes that very clear, in fact.
Yeah. I'm looking at some of it here. I mean, just to read, the myth is TTIP will force EU governments to privatise public services we all rely on. Fact, all EU trade deals leave governments free to run public services as they wish.
Yeah.
Now, there has been, you know, moves, I suppose, towards some sort of privatisations across Europe, and I suppose that kind of builds into what where people see again.
Yes.
You can see how people go straight to the conspiracy. We want to call it conspiracy theories for the ease of the conversation, and go, well, hold on a minute. I think probably the one that jumped out, that some of the stuff I read, was around health services.
Yeah.
And how we all know how health services work in America. Hugely expensive,
yes.
Masses of insurance.
Yeah.
And now what we've seen in this country in the last few years is we've seen a very, very big and campaign by government to force more people to take out private health insurance.
Yeah, I was astonished at that, having lived abroad, lived out of Ireland for 16 years when I came. I mean, when I lived here before. Mm. I mean, having any kind of private insurance was definitely an add-on luxury, you know?
Yeah.
And I was astonished when I moved back to discover that most people have that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of the problem with the whole atmosphere in which TTIP is happening is the things that have happened in the world economically and politically over the last 20 years, that it's actually a bigger issue, and that the moves starting from Reagan and Thatcher's time in the 80s, where there was a lot of privatisation. And so, I mean, you know, before there was ever anything called TTIP, you had, member states of the EU privatising public sector. In this document, the top 10 myths that the Commission has produced, they're saying that there's nothing in TTIP that will stop governments even re-nationalising public services that have been privatised.
Yeah.
So that's far from the truth. But the things I can understand how there is a tendency for people to believe the worst, given what's been happening in the world over the last 20 years, and as we know very well in Ireland, over the last 10 particularly, with the crash. And for me, I mean, trade has been a function of human behaviour for as long as humans have been around.
Yeah.
There is an argument, of course, that TTIP will allow a lot more economic, there'll be economic benefits of it. I mean, we have to wait and see whether that's true or not. I don't necessarily support TTIP. I have an open mind on it, but I would also be going into it with a slightly critical view as well of, well, let's see what's happening. But I just, to be honest with you, I think we all have enough things to be concerned about in our daily lives without having to worry and be scared by things that are just being made up and that are rumours.
Yeah.
So I'm very much against the scaremongering about anything, about TTIP or everything else.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons why I contacted NIR FM about it.
With regards to the health, and we'll stick on that as a public service, people, as you say, kind of join the dots. They go, hold on a minute, government here in Ireland is really pushing more and more people to take out private health insurance, and the private health insurance in this country has been beset with problems from the time it came into being. It's a different conversation, but I have my views, and I'm sure you have your views on why it's beset with problems. But we'll do that another day. And people then come along and they go, well, oh, hold on a minute. All these American companies get millions on health insurance, and now our governments in this country are kind of forcing us, and do it now before you're 35 or it'll go up exponentially in 10 years' time. Well, how do they know it's going to go up? And is that what you're kind of saying? People are kind of putting two and two together and getting seven.
Well, you see, the thing is as well, if they see that the EU is negotiating with America, now this is on trade and investment, it's not necessarily going to affect health services at all. But as you say, if people think that, okay, if it's a some kind of a deal between the US and the EU, then are we going to be expected to respect American norms for things? And they have good reason to be concerned about the state of the health services in America and the ball of the people who don't have access to it. So, again, I'm not sure why the health services have been particularly lumped in with the rest of it, because I, as far as I'm aware, that's not going to be part of the negotiations.
Well, you see, this is the thing, and I think this is what the problem is with TTIP, is it is shrouded in mystery. It's very, very hard to get people to come out and talk pro TTIP, and even yourself, you say you're not absolutely pro TTIP, but it's very, very hard to get people to come out and maybe talk about it in detail, because you know, as we know, the document is locked away. There's strict rules about how people can see it, what they can see in it, and everything. And of course, that feeds then paranoia, if you want to call it something. Why is it so secret? What are they hiding? And I suppose that's where people then get, as I say, put two and two together and get seven.
Well, the Commission does have a website where it reports as widely as possible on what's happening with the TTIP negotiations. Mm-hmm. So quite a lot of it is in the public domain. Now, obviously, with negotiations, they can't come out and sort of say, well, he said this and she said that and they disagreed on this and they agreed on that, because the nature of negotiations is that all of that has to happen within, you know, within a closed room in a way. Yeah. I know that because some of the people in the EU Parliament, I believe, also are given access to some of the documents. But again, because they don't want it leaked into the media and that some of the media will will put their headlines, they'll spin it in such a way to make it sound absolutely, you know, extraordinary. So I can understand why they kind of want to keep it.
Why they're negotiating it in secret. So
well, not so much in secret, but it's confidential. Do you know? I mean, for instance, you know, if trade unions in Ireland are negotiating with employers on job conditions or whatever, they're not going to be walking outside of the room and announcing to the media every time they've had a meeting and saying, well, he said this and she said that. It's normal that negotiations would happen in a certain amount of confidentiality before. But obviously, TTIP has the possibility to have a big impact. So people are right to be aware of it, to be concerned about it and to watch it. But the idea that somehow it's being done in secret in order to stop people knowing about it, it's just not true.
I'm going to roll these two topics into one here. TTIP will force the EU to import hormone-treated beef, and TTIP will weaken EU standards. Now, this kind of rolls into the whole genetically modified foods area and everything else, and there's so many additives that are allowed in America that are banned in Europe. And again, people are saying, you know, under TTIP, we'll be forced to accept, you know, we'll be importing more American beef that's treated differently and is reared differently to the way we rear beef over in this country, and it's going to completely pollute the food chain and everything else. The information that's there about that, you know, how are people kind of jumping to that kind of conclusion that, you know, from whatever's being negotiated in the TTIP package to, we're all going to have to eat American-style food. We're all going to have to eat genetically modified foods. All of our standards will go out the window. All of these additives and all that are banned in the EU will now not be banned anymore, and we're all just going to have to sucker up. Which, I suppose, it sounds a bit alarmist.
Yeah. One of the departments I worked in the Commission for 10 years was actually the Agriculture Department. So I'd be kind of aware of some of the, you know, discussions that have gone on around GMOs, for instance. I mean, GMOs are still, they have a thing called the precautionary principle. These big international organisations are wonderful with coming up with the most complicated words possible to describe things. But the precautionary principle means that nothing will be allowed into the food market in the EU unless it's proved to be safe. And because there were doubts about the long-term effects of GMOs, they weren't allowed into the EU. And it's only recently that some slight modifications in the laws have been allowed that each member state can now decide. But, I mean, there are still countries in the EU which absolutely ban GMOs. And that's not going to change. So we will not be obliged to have GMOs if we don't want to. It just means that there won't be a trade restriction on them being imported if people in the EU want to import them. The same thing applies to, so far as I understand, obviously I'm not party to the negotiations, but it's the point of the TTIP is to not allow the regulations on either side of the Atlantic to block trade.
Yeah.
So in other words, the benefits for Europeans would be that we'd be able to export our high-quality food produce into America and hopefully convert them to the fact that maybe this stuff is better for you. Well, good luck with that, anyway.
I was just thinking the exact same thing.
Apologies to all Americans who are listening. I think if it's going to be the case that American, because it does look as though there will be more American beef can be imported to the EU after that. But it will have to be, you know, labelled as where it's coming from and what way it has been reared. So people will still have a choice about whether they're going to buy it and eat it or not. We're not going to be forced to have it. And our own standards here in Europe are not going to change at all. They're going to be particularly protected because we've worked very hard in the EU at developing those standards, and we certainly want to protect them. They're a very sensitive issue and have been for any number of years.
Absolutely. And you know what I'm thinking here while you were talking about that is, okay, we import US beef, but there's a growing market in the EU now in halal meat products.
Oh, right.
So you know, people can buy halal meat if they want, and I suppose that's what you're saying is we can import all the American beef we want if people want to buy it.
Yes.
The choice will be there for them, but it's not necessarily going to replace.
I think the concerns here, particularly for European farmers, beef farmers, is that they're worried that the American beef will be cheaper and obviously will be more competitive for them. Mm-hmm. And there will be people who would just say, it's cheaper, I don't have the money, and therefore I'm going to buy the cheaper American beef. So, I mean, that is a genuine concern for farmers here. It's called competition. I'm not a wholehearted proponent of competition either. I mean, I think there are certain areas where, you know, and certain standards should be maintained. There are certain areas where it's not necessarily always good to have that.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we're going to, as I said, jump in, and because it all kind of leads into then what the biggest issue around TTIP is and has been so far is the international state dispute system settlements or whatever, the ISDS.
Yes,
investor state dispute settlement process.
Well done, Mark.
I've read it and said it so many times. And again, that all leads into this thing. And again, the myth is that big business will call all the shots. Mm. We've seen in the budget a couple of weeks ago that the minimum wage was raised. There's what's been put out there by people who are opposed to TTIP is the Irish government will not be able to raise the minimum wage without first going to all of these big multinational corporations and saying, is it okay with you, lads? And if they say, no, it's not, well then it's all scuppered. And that basically says is that these companies are going to run roughshod over sovereign governments. Again, a little bit of maybe truth to that, or is it all
a lot of this seems to be based on the experience of, I think it was Austria, who before any of the TTIP stuff started, there was a case where a company called, I think it's Vierio, who are also involved in the whole water setup here in Ireland, they were able to take a case against...
it was the Egyptian government.
Egyptians, thank you very much.
After the revolution in Egypt.
That's right, yeah. And they took them to court because the Egyptians wanted, raise the minimum wage, and the company won.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, oh, that's what's going to happen everywhere here now once we have TTIP. And that's just not true. The ISDS would be, I mean, if it was true, it would obviously be a cause for major, major concern.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a democratically elected body called the European Parliament, which is also paying a lot of attention to this because it has, as well as having people on the right politically, also has people on the left politically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably are better acquainted with this than me, Mark, that in July of this year, they really had a debate about the whole TTIP process.
They did.
And they agreed to, in principle, to having the pact, but specifically not having the ISDS process. So what they're hoping to do with the TTIP now is to really clarify the relations that would exist between governments and big companies.
Yeah.
So it's not, so that process, you know, that system is not in place yet. I can't see it ever being the case where governments or where companies are going to be allowed to dictate governments.
Yeah.
I just, you know, you'll have people marching in the street all across Europe if that happens. It's just not going to happen.
Well, I suppose that's where the undermines democracy lines comes from because, I mean, ultimately then, if that proves to be the case, well, what's the point in people voting? What's the point in having a government? Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately, so, you know, what's really bugging me now is that we're bang up against time, and
sure.
We should have gave a whole hour to this, because but what I'm going to do is I'm going to get you to come back, and we'll do it again more in depth, because it really is fascinating. And I tell people all the time, and I share stuff about TTIP on my social media and everything else, and all I just say to people is read it.
Exactly.
Just read it.
The information's
out there.
Make
up your
own
mind.
Yeah.
You know, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, or you're mad against it, or you're mad for it, or whatever, just read the information, because, again, social media especially fuels the conspiracy for it.
I think that's a problem for the people who are against it. It undermines their credibility if they're not basing what their arguments on fact. And having looked at some of the sources that have been used for some of the things that have been stated, it does seem to be a question of your one's cat set to your one's dog, and
it's a lot of it about. But you know, listen, Audrey, it's absolutely fascinating, and as I say, I'm hugely fascinated by TTIP, and again, for the same reasons as yourself, you're saying, I don't tend to believe everything I read. I tend to drill down into stuff and try and research and get some facts on both sides. And it's been brilliant to have somebody like yourself talking on the, shall we say, the semi-pro side of...
Well, I'm keeping an open mind, and I think that everybody else should. I mean, obviously, we have to pay attention to it. It will have a big impact. But I think scaremongering people into a state of fear about it is just so bad for everybody.
Absolutely. And, you know, the clearer we can make the conversation, the better it is for everybody, because then people can make informed decisions, and everyone can move forward. And, you know, we can put, as you say, the scaremongering and the whatever behind us. But listen, as we said at the start, if anybody wants to look at this document, and we really only scratched the surface of it, we could easily spend an hour at it. It's the top 10 myths about TTIP separating fact from fiction. It's available on the European Commission website, which is eucommission.ie, I think, is that it?
Let's see.
I'll look it up while we're on the break, and I'll give people the email address. I think we have it here. It's to download this brochure, go to ec.europa.eu/trade/policy.in.focus/TTIP.
Oh, you better put that on the website. Yeah, we'll
put it up with the podcast. But I mean, if anybody just Googles European Commission, and
listen, if you Google or use any other website, search engines
are available.
If you just do that myth and TTIP, the page will come up.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, Audrey, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I'm going to stay in touch with you, because it's
you're welcome.
It's going to be great to have a voice of reason on this stuff the more we roll in, and we've lots of stuff coming up. Over the coming weeks and months with elections, and I would imagine TTIP will be something that will come more into the fore when we get into the election campaign proper in the new year and everything. But listen, Audrey, for now, thanks very much for coming
in.
It's been great meeting you, and I look forward to talking to you again.